Today's episode is brought to you by Bioptimizers. Hey guys, if you take a magnesium product right now, one of the real popular ones that are on the shelves in all your favorite health food stores, chances are you are flushing your magnesium down the toilet. And I mean that literally. You see, the most common type of magnesium used in most magnesium supplements is actually a laxative. So if you're using it, well, you're basically pooping and maybe peeing some of it out. Which means 80% of the Americans who are magnesium deficient that actually need to be getting that magnesium into their body may actually be making their deficiency worse by actually taking magnesium because now they're just pushing everything out the other end. How ironic is that? And the worst part about magnesium deficiency is how it affects almost every aspect of your health. Your metabolism suffers, you can't lose weight, your blood pressure goes up, and a whole lot more. And the worst part is your sleep suffers the most. So what is the solution here? Well, guys, it is called Magnesium Breakthrough, and it is my favorite magnesium product that I continue to highly recommend on this podcast and through social media. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium so that your body can actually absorb it all. And this month, they are including free bottles of their full line of digestive health products on select orders while supplies last. That means you are getting free products to try that will support your digestive systems along with magnesium. So having an optimized digestive system means less energy trying to digest foods and more into your daily life. So digestion is another key component of health. And right now with this special offer that is only available at magbreakthrough.com/runga, you can pair those digestive support products with your new magnesium breakthrough and completely change your health. Just visit magbreakthrough.com/runga and use code RUNGA10 at checkout for 10% off this special offer. Today's episode is also brought to you by Cured Nutrition. Cured Rise is a CBD-infused nootropic supplement that has been carefully crafted with all-natural ingredients that work synergistically to sustain focus and wakefulness while combating the stressors of daily life. And on the other side of your day, we also have Cured Zen. This is like the best night's sleep you've ever had naturally. Zen encourages relaxation. It combats stress. It promotes complete deep and REM sleep cycles. And it allows us to wake up and feel refreshed and not drowsy the next morning. So it's like you get to sleep, you stay asleep, and guess what? You start the next day again with Rise. Cured Nutrition is creating just such game-changing products for us, and these two CBD-infused products to start and end your day are two of my absolute favorites. And right now, you can save over at coachjodi.com/cured. That's coachjodi.com/cured. I've got a discount code over there for you, and I highly recommend giving these two incredible products a try. On today's episode, I speak with Samuel B. Lee, MD, a board-certified psychiatrist on a mission to create a new global paradigm of mental health. Dr. Samuel is currently serving as the medical director of the Four Worlds International Institute and has actually recently transitioned away from traditional psychiatric practice in order to focus on treating what he feels are the root causes of mental health diseases through what he refers to as the heart-mind protocol. In fact, he's been traveling around the world, treating people with this protocol, and consistently bringing about what Western medicine would only be able to call miracles, but that Dr. Samuel sees as rooted in very real and predictable and repeatable science through his work as an avid quantum morphogenic physicist. Dr. Lee's purpose is to help activate a billion souls and in the process create a new global paradigm of mental health that focuses on energy and consciousness rather than a pile of diagnoses, labels, and symptoms. And on today's show, Dr. Lee and I chat about parenting, about children, how their minds work between the ages of 0 and 7, the illusion of time, consciousness, love, breathwork, and this heart-mind protocol and how Dr. Lee believes psychedelic medicine should be performed and integrated into daily life.
And if you like what you hear and you want to find Dr. Samuel Lee, check out transcendentmentalhealth.com or The Spiritual Psychiatrist on Instagram. That's The Spiritual Psychiatrist. That's his handle. He also has a book called The Spiritual Guide to Mental Health that you can find on Amazon. And his email, and I can't believe we're going to put his email address on the air here, but we're going to do it. It's samuelbslemd@gmail.com. That's samuelbslemd@gmail.com. And if you send him an email, you can be added. You can just request it in the subject line of the email to be added to his Telegram channel, which is private. That's where he's going to be releasing some courses and some upcoming content that you're not going to find anywhere else. So be sure to check that out. And that's it, guys. I really hope you enjoy this podcast with Dr. Samuel Lee. He's a really exciting guy, really passionate guy. We had so much fun chatting on the podcast, and I appreciate you guys. And so, hey, feel free to share the show around to anybody that you think could benefit from it. Thank you guys so much for all the support of my partners and guests and myself. It just means the world to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And hey, enjoy the show, guys. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, nothing makes me happier than hearing about a pregnancy or whatever. But then it's like doubly happy when, you know, it's coming from somebody that I know is going to bring an amazing human being to fruition, right? So in other words, yeah. Like we talked about, you know, just a second ago, this new paradigm of mental health. And I think like there's so much to do, but strong fathers and amazing mothers are, that's an ingredient, right? Like what are your thoughts there? I know we have so much to talk about, but I think that's a cool place to begin.
Yeah, I love that. Let's start with that. Like fathers and mothers are the sauce of life, man. And when that DNA, that sperm and that egg meet, 7 to 11 generations of all the beautiful things forward and backward. There's no time, only consciousness moving through different densities. So our future children and our ancestors all meet there, not to mention the quantum potential. And for certain ancient souls that are coming in right now, they literally choose the perfect womb. They choose. There's no force and source. For there to be love, there must be a choice, which means this ancient soul chooses the womb. It chooses a generalized mission. And right now, from what I know, there's many souls wanting to incarnate into planet Earth for this amazing, beautiful inflection point of the birthing of the new Earth and the birthing of new systems. And so these souls are coming in hot like a fajita. And, you know, they choose, man. And on the day they're born, it wasn't only for Jesus, man. On the day they're born, the planets align perfectly. Like, you know, Saturn, Jupiter. The consciousness is so intelligent. And we are consciousness that when it aligns perfectly on the day these children are born, all of the planets are aligned when they're vibrating and oscillating at high frequency. All of the beneficial aspects of the planets like Jupiter, growth, expansion, generosity are aligned with this child-specific mission. Now, when we're at a low frequency, the difficult, challenging aspects of the astrology are with the child, but these are also to develop perseverance, to develop character. And when we leave this planet, all we take with us is our character, who we become, and also our relationships, and love connects. So love is the cohesive power of the universe. So yeah, I love that, brother. I'm so stoked to the great, if Earth is a school and we're here to learn how to receive, share, and give love, I mean, becoming a parent is probably the greatest joy, privilege. I mean, you get to eat ice cream again in the mirror neurons of your child. You know, you get to live again and experience and pass on all of the spiritual wisdom, you know, with free will choice always, and help activate their DNA into their mission at an early age, their deep purpose, and just provide the environment. They're my teacher. Like this, children are my greatest teacher. Pure, innocent, not guilty. Imagination is still on. Imagination is the bridge to the invisible world. So super stoked for these kids coming in. And you can see it in their eyes. They're so clear because fathers such as you and mothers have done a lot of work and cleared so much karma that these children can choose now these sacred wombs, and they're coming in hot.
Like a fajita. Don't touch the side of the plate.
No, man. It's sizzling. Gosh.
Oh, I love that. And it is such a joy. And I love that you said, you know, the children are ultimately our teachers. And this has been so true, you know, and I just had a step back the other day and just looking at my son, Leon, and I've never gotten upset with him. He's 2.5 years old, but realizing from his perspective, the power I possess and hold, right? I can drive a car. I can like pretty much do anything he can conceive of. Like we look up to our parents as these immortal gods. And I just think as parents, it's hard to put ourselves into the perspectives of our children in terms of this, the person they see. And you do the impossible almost on an hourly or minute-to-minute basis right in front of them. And there's no wonder why every kid thinks their dad and their mom are the best and that they're amazing and they're super. But as it relates to parenting, that sort of realization of this or this picture that I painted of myself through his eyes, how do we sort of take that? What sort of burden of responsibility does that come with it in terms of how we parent? Like, how do we get involved? How do we discipline? And I know this is a complex question, but when you change the perspective in that way, it's like if I were to ever, when the day comes that I'm upset with him, right? It's like I'm going to give a lot of thought to how I handle that particular situation.
Here's what's coming to me, brother. First of all, what a beautiful man you are. I just want to acknowledge that 2.5 years with this child, which is like the greatest test of love. Love is patient. And so for you to not have once have gotten upset with your child, that leads me to the second part, which is like literally till the ages of 0 to 7, their subconscious mind, the app store to their iPhone is wide open. They are literally in a brainwave state where they're downloading apps through mirror neurons. And by the time they're 35, Dr. Joe Dispenza says 95% of everything they do is subconscious mind programming from what they learn from 0 to 7, the apps of how they receive love, the patterns of how they receive love, which they were watching their parents literally from ages of 0 to 7 downloading. Oh, I get love from my father when I do this. Oh, I get love from my mother. Oh, I get love from the world. And these apps are running the subconscious mind. So from this window of 0 to 7, two words are coming to me, man, which is like role model. They're watching. Their mirror neurons are firing. What is my dad like? Oh, okay. He's downloading literally everything from his parents. And so a role model, and I want to even get into this subtle energetics. I want to present a new perspective of parenting where it's like, don't look at me, son, look at you. You are who you've been looking for. So the subtle energetics of, I think a lot of fathers and mothers in the past, it served us and it brought us up to this point where it was like, hey, I'm going to role model for you what you should do. But it's like, no, this is me and the subtle energetics of me. This is me. But I'm going to role model to you for you to always look within yourself, that you have everything you need inside of yourself. But look within where, Father? Into your intron potential DNA, which is projecting your hologram. And so teaching them the tools. So role model number one, because they're watching and downloading everything, is the word I like to use. Like, let me be that example of how to treat people. Let me be that example, be a role model that he can download, that actually the power is within you. Don't never put anybody on a pedestal or below you. We're all equal. The universality of human beings. Yes, I want to teach that to my child. How do I do that? Through role modeling, by how I treat the waiter, by how I treat the waitress, by how I treat the billionaire, how I treat the prostitute. They're watching everything and they're going to see that, oh, dad is not putting anyone above or below, but he's role modeling for me to always stand in my power. And I think like the most healthy thing we can pass on to our children is a sense of healthy self-esteem. Believe in yourself. You are limitless. You can fulfill your mission and more. And that's through role modeling. And the second thing I think is the most beautiful thing is, as soon as you can like literally find, oh, this child from the age of 0 to 7, they already know what they're here to do. Like before we program them or turn the imagination off as society tries to do, they already know. They don't know what money is yet. They don't know what anything is yet. Cool. At that point where there's no programs running, I simply observe my child and I say, oh, wow, he loves making things with his hands. He loves building Legos. What kind of Legos? Ancient Egyptian Legos, what? You know, and you know, like, oh, okay, right? And then so I role model. And then two, once I know what my child is really geared towards, I provide the support, the space. It's not even, I'm not even the teacher. I just provide the space, the resources for that child to put in his 10,000 hours at a young, early age. Because once he or she puts in 10,000 hours, they become an expert in that field of what they were born to do. And literally they can make a living off of that. And what is success anyway? I think success is doing what you love, contributing to humanity through your creativity and doing what you love with who you love. And if they can put in 10,000 hours from a young age, by the time they're like 12, 13, 14, 15, they're already going to be positively contributing to society just by being who they are, by doing what they love. So I think role model and support is like what I'm really tuning into.
Yeah, brother. And it's this, like, it's the child is going to do as I do, not as I say, right? Mm. As you mentioned with the waiter and the waitress. And I think that's, and it's what else is coming up. There's this amazing book. It's called The Path of Least Resistance by Fritz. Is it Robert Fritz? And he talks about how, and this, and by the way, the sort of analogy of from 0 to 7 uploading apps or downloading apps. And I think that's profound, right? So to put it into other words, it's like my son is literally on a daily basis maneuvering through life. And when he gets positive reinforcement or love, he downloads an app and says, when I did this, I got love. Okay, so I've got an app for that. And what you're saying is we're basically piling up these conditioning tools, these learning tools that basically create our entire future. And if we're not careful, and this gets back to Robert Fritz, is like he says 85% of what children hear before the age of 5 or 6, whatever it was, is negative. So 85% of what they hear is don't do that. Don't do this. Don't touch that. Move away from there. Get down from there. Wow. So that means 85% of the apps are related to, yes, what do I do for love? But also, like, is this place safe? If 85% of what I'm hearing is cautionary or what does that do to us later in life, man? When we're 35 and
I love that point, because what's coming to me when you say that, it's just about, like, you know, relaying off of what you said, is the microcosm is the macrocosm. So 5 companies currently approximately control 90% of the media, which controls the flow of information, which controls the perception and the mind, the information that goes into the mind, and it's purposely programmed to be 80 to 85% negative. Right. And so that goes into the mind. The mind is the administrator of the frequency, which administers that frequency into my body, which codes for the proteins, which are the building blocks of life. So whoever controls the flow of information controls the perception, controls what is being administered. And in society, for a long time, 85% has been purposely news, 85% purposely programmed to be negative, to keep people in fear, into a frequency bandwidth, false evidence appearing real. Therefore, the parents are just repeatedly regurgitating in the past, not now, like what they had been, you know, consuming. And so I think it's such a brilliant idea now to step into the awareness of, oh, these children from the ages of 0 to 7, their subconscious mind wide open. If I turn off the news and I turn on, tell me who you're with and I'll tell you who you are. All these beautiful aunties and uncles speaking positivity, singing positivity in eco-villages and tribes, and taking them to these ceremonial events where their mind is being infused with these beautiful sounds. Their language centers are still on. So, like, what that means is, like, all these different languages saying I love you in all these different languages from all of these different aunties and uncles from different countries, and now their mind is literally programming, if you're downloading, that it's a safe environment, that I am limitless, that love is the answer, that I can do anything I put my heart to, because all these aunties and uncles, and especially my mom and dad, are modeling this at home.
Gosh, I love that. So 2 days ago, I think this is timely, I was literally explaining to Leon, who's 2.5, what love was.
So I said, you know, as I probably do 600 times a day, I love you, kid, you know, or whatever I say to him.
Yeah.
I know what I said, but I'm curious, what would you say to your 2-year-old son if he asked you, Dad, what is love?
I would say, dear son, love is the cohesive power of the universe. It's the super glue of life. It's what connects. Love connects. It's what keeps my atoms together, my cells together. It's what keeps my sanity together. It's what keeps this family together. It's what keeps this planet together. It's what keeps this universe together. Love is the most powerful force on the planet. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It keeps no record of wrongs. It always perseveres, always hopes, always trusts. Love never fails. You are love, my son. And if you ever forget that, know that there is nothing in this planet, above, below, anywhere, that can separate you from this eternal love of source, which you are. And just to remind you, my son, I sang you a song while you were in the womb. And anytime you forget, I will sing you that song again. And your cellular memory of that amniotic fluid will trigger. And you will remember that you are love. And there is nothing on this planet that can separate you from this powerful force, which you are.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty beautiful, man. I think... imagine, right? And I'll tell you what I said. I said, you like your tractors, but you love your mommy.
That's probably a better explanation for that age, you know?
But I'm going to go with what you said. No, but you said it's what keeps my cells together.
Yeah.
It is the super glue of life. Is love the opposite of fear?
You know, what's coming to me when you say that is fear is false evidence appearing real, which means like all things flow from source. Literally, if there's a science to that, all things return to source. As I inhale, all the energy from source is all simultaneously happening right now, all future potentials. As I exhale, the memory book goes back into through my eighth chakra, the thymus gland, back into the living records of source. Fulfilling the original intention of source, which is source wanted to experience itself in many different forms and learn about itself. And there are those beings who choose, because there's no force in source for there to be love. There has to be a choice, which means there are certain beings who choose false evidence appearing real fear. But all things are now bathing in this eternal source consciousness field always. And right now, there's a very important inflection point in humanity where there are certain systems based on holarchy, lack of transparency, based on a triangle pyramid scheme where each step down from the triangle knows less and less about, and they're using fear to control workers and things like that. Those systems, there will be a polarization in frequency. And for some reason, Austin seems to be a really important city in that inflection point in humanity's history, where a lot of like tribe people are gathering. But anyway, like those people who continue to choose fear, and it's a choice, who continue to choose to abide by systems that are based upon fear, false evidence appearing real, they can never be separate from source. So it's still an illusion. But what will happen is they will consume energy to create energy, consume energy to create energy, because they're not connected directly to the source of all energy. And eventually they will run out of energy, which they will return to source as space dust. Still sacred, still source, with no incarnational memory of its existence. But those who choose to abide by new earth principles, new ways based on holarchy, trust, respect, unity, the sacred law of one, all things exist and are have intrinsic value and are interconnected, and who choose to have a direct connection to source, as Jesus was doing every, you know, when he prayed, as you know, all, you know, every morning when we connected directly to the source of all energy. And it's mathematical, it's base 12 wisdom, an energy that expands. I'm not giving love, I'm not consuming energy, but I'm sharing. And so I don't consume energy to create energy. And therefore, I can embody my soul frequencies, 4th, 5th, and 6th stranded DNA, my oversoul, 7th, 8th, and 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, avatar, inner Christos, 13th, 14th, 15th strand, eventually Rishi self. And then the primal light and sound fields, which is what people call ascended masters, Adasya adepts, they don't like to be called masters. They're just primal light and sound fields, which have sent a portion of its quanta into the space-time existence and returned to source as source wholeness with full incarnational memory of its existence. And then guess what Dasya Depths do? They use that space dust to create new planets, new systems, to continue to fulfill the ever-expanding intention of source to experience itself in many different ways. So, you know, it's, I wouldn't say fear is the opposite. It's just an illusion of the opposite, which, but all things flow from source. All things are connected to source. All separation from source is but an illusion.
So in a way, like the 85% of what kids hear is negative, 85% of the news is sort of fear-based. So it's this like impedance. It's like it creates it's an illusion and a distraction, but it disrupts the flow. It disrupts the flow of love within us, out of us, and back into us.
I love how you just took that and grounded that into three. Yeah, reality. Yes, it's a lower vibrational frequency of source, which impedes the source wholeness or higher identity accretion, which will literally eventually, if people continue to choose that illusion, source will honor that and allow someone to, you know, if you want to say that, sever that connection to source, quote unquote, direct connection, even though it's still connected, that direct connection, and return to source as space does. False evidence appearing.
I love that. And to take one step back, and then we'll take two steps forward. Another thing that you were saying about, you know, we know our mission when we're three, when we're four, but similar to fear, we're uploading all this software and learning how to navigate essentially our family system or, you know, whatever it might be. And we might learn that, you know, I love building houses, but I'm supposed to be a doctor. You know, we might learn things like at a young age. And what's sort of interesting about that is there was another book about Dharma, and they said that the number one sort of consistent element of people that are, you know, 40 or however old, and they're just in it. And they use the example of the woman that was like the first person that had ever infiltrated a group of orangutans. So like, she was like the first one that was like, they would like do her hair and like, you know, they let her in, you know. And her story was essentially that, you know, she came from a very well-to-do family, but she was obsessed with animals from a very young age. And they kind of went against their better judgment because they said, we're all doctors and lawyers around here. You know, you can't play with monkeys. But they allowed it. And, you know, 40 years later, she's this like, she might have won a Nobel Prize. I don't know what she's, wow. She's on the radar. So she's fulfilling this Dharma. And so there's this, I guess this massive responsibility of parents is like to be aware of those uploads and those downloads and those apps, because source intelligence, our son, our daughter has the keys to their mission, but we tend to get in the way and kind of cloud their judgment. Yet when we look at the happiest adults that are really contributing to humanity in the world, it's like they're basically doing what they loved as a child, and they never got distracted and they never got pulled away.
Yeah. Amen, brother. Like, man, there's such a beauty in the perfection of source. Like, my family was more like, you're going to be a doctor, you know, religious programming, like all of these different things, right? Implanted into, and like unlearning always, that's really what it is. Unlearning and deconditioning and deprogramming all of those programs that had been instilled within me, you know, was a job and a half that took like 10 years. But at the same time, there's such a perfection to source that I chose to be born into those programs, that type of family, so that I can develop the compassion to become a psychiatrist, that I could go through major depression four times because of that programming, which called guilt and shame. And then I can develop the tools and everything I needed to be able to help people that with the things and tools that help me. So for me personally, like that, yeah, all of that programming, religious, cultural, societal, I chose that. I allowed that. And I chose that family. So that was perfect. But I do think we're coming into this new era now where the like people like you and I, we've done so much work. You know, our women have done so much work to deprogram and decondition that these children are, like we said, coming in hot with a clean plate, with not as much karma and programming as we did. And with that space, like literally they know they're clear. They can have access. And that brings me on the topic of indigo children. People talk about indigo children. But what even is an indigo child? It's a child that's coming in on a service contract to humanity, which some of them, there's three types, but some of them have their fourth, fifth, and sixth stranded DNA, what science used to call junk DNA. It's actually just an access. Each stranded DNA is a bandwidth of frequency, a level of perception, a level of mind. It's also, if you want to call it, so a higher sensory perception. They're coming in with fourth, fifth, and sixth stranded DNA, what's quantum morphs and physics calls their soul online. So they can sense different frequencies, kind of like dogs can after you pray, they come lick you. They can sense and are more sensitive to different higher levels of frequency. And it's unfortunate right now, a lot of these indigo children, because, you know, psychiatry, modern day psychiatry tries to get them to fit in when they're created to stand out. And when they stand out and they have access to different frequencies, they put them on mind numbing medications to try to get them to fit in. That's not normal, but it's just like they're just accessing different levels of frequency that a lot of people can't access. And then they're throwing them to psych hospitals and mind numbing them. But in all actuality, these children are coming in, and now us as parents, we realize, oh, wow, they still have cellular memory of certain time periods. Oh, wow, they have access to certain levels of perception that might not be normal. Oh, they're special, not different. And that's why these shamanic cultures understood when a child would start having communications with the invisible world, they wouldn't cast them out of and put them on psych meds or put them in a mental hospital. They would say, oh, this child has access, is coming in to help humanity, and find him a mentor who's been through that, who can guide the child to learn how to work with these invisible frequencies. And then eventually this child would become the local town shaman. So these indigo children are coming on service contracts and here to help. And I think we're starting, consciousness is finally starting to realize, oh, these children are actually here to help. And it's a science. It's in the DNA.
That's awesome, man. And it's, you know, it's funny because like in Autobiography of a Yogi, like all these amazing yogis, and this is only 100 years ago. It's not like 400 years ago, not sure, like 1,000 years ago. And they're talking about these guys like levitating, you know, moving things with their minds, reading minds, like doing all this incredibly powerful stuff back, you know, in India 100 years ago. And you know, I guess over the course of the last 200 years, because some of them are pretty old in the 1920s. But point being, I've thought about that. Like, if there's a child, like if my son right now said, like, hey, there's a, you know, there's a being in front of me or something, I'm just going to be like, oh, you know, but there's this, like, I've thought about that a lot. Like, what are the chances that somebody that is truly gifted, and we see this with attention deficit disorder and some of these, you know, childhood conditions or whatever that are medicated. Like, what if we're like medicating the kids that are the gifts that have these, you know, as you said, these soul contracts or these sacred contracts, these duties on the planet? And I think like the odds today of, and I guess that's why we choose our parents, which I would love to kind of hear more about, because it's more important than ever, I would imagine, because it seems like there's like less of those people even in India today than maybe there was when you read some of these older books and these legends.
Yeah, you know, and I think we're coming to the age where we realize, like, G-U-R-U. I mean, if I ever had one message, it's like, you are who you've been looking for. Go within, but go within where? Go within where? To the intron potential DNA. The DNA that scientists used to call junk DNA because they couldn't see it. It's not junk. It's potential intron DNA. And the fourth, fifth, and so it responds to what you cannot see, frequency. God said, let there be light, and there was light. Sound in light and sacred symbols, which is sound and light dancing, is the language of our potential intron DNA. So these ancient yogis in India just 100 years ago, all they had done was activate. When you activate your 12-stranded DNA, that's your avatar, inner Christos. Therefore, Jesus said, you will do even greater things than me. Okay, so what was he talking about? Like, every single yogi, if they were alive.
We didn't believe him.
I know, right? And he said, if you have faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. What are you talking about? Like, okay, he's talking about the intron potential DNA because he was tuning into a time and day where science and spirituality would meet and people would understand the science of the 12-stranded DNA. And so all of these ancient yogis, for example, Kriya Yoga was taught by Yogananda. Well, what is Kriya Yoga? Well, it's breath work, which is increasing the frequency, mana in, prana out, eternal light out, prana, life force energy coming in through these breath works. It's also pumping the lower stranded, if you want to say what yogis call kundalini. What is that? A lot of people are pumping kundalini, but what is that? It's a frequency. Dimensions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, 8, 9 at the bottom of the spine. When you pump it, you know, it goes up through the cerebral spinal fluid. It tickles. If the chakras are clear, it can. If it's not, you're going to have a healing crisis. But if it's clear, then it's going to go up. It's going to tickle through the cerebral spinal fluid, the ventricles, the pineal gland, which the pineal gland has crystals, and it becomes a transducer of energy and connects you to the cosmic, you know, mother, whatever you want to call it, unified field. And you can start to like literally remember who you are through dimensions 1 through 9, bandwidth of frequency, have access to higher levels of perception. And every time a DNA strand unlocks, there's a cellular memory that is released and a new natural ability. These abilities, the universe is mental. If you believe you can do it, you can do it. And as children, our children are coming in with that part of their brain already lit up, which believes in imagination. Unfortunately, society through time, Santa Claus ain't real. This ain't real. This ain't real. What are you talking about? It wasn't the war on conscious drugs. It was the war on consciousness. Actually, imagination is the bridge to the invisible world. I love the story that Brother Aubrey Marcus tells. Like, he was at a shamanic ceremony, and the shaman was like, he hadn't even taken the medicine yet, the Ibogaine or whatever. He's like, hey, there's someone on the moon who wants to talk to you. And Aubrey's like, what are you talking about? I haven't even taken the medicine. It's like, he's like, he comes back a second time. There's someone on the moon who wants to talk to you. I haven't taken the medicine. Third time comes back, the shaman talks to Aubrey. Hey, yo, there's someone on the moon who wants to talk to you. Finally, he gets the message. He closes his eyes and he imagines he's on the moon. And there is his grandma waiting to talk to him. And they have this beautiful conversation. It's a frequency, imagination. The universe is mental. So when I'm facilitating sacred ceremony, and I blow and I say with my mind, there's a white bubble of unconditional love only surrounding this person who is journeying. Only unconditional love on the physical and multidimensional space. And I see it, I visualize it, and I reinforce it with my breath. People literally during the journey pop off their mindfold and say, Sam, what are you doing, man? I'm in this bubble fortress of light. And like, I know there's no darkness that's going to come in. One time I had this whole, like, you know, beautiful lady who resonates with Hawaiian culture say, Sam, there's this fortress of Tahitian warriors surrounding me. And like, they're protecting me. And I know I'm safe to do anything I want in this journey. Right? So imagination is the bridge. And our children are coming in with this imagination. They're imagining fairies. They're imagining unicorns, of course, right? And so there's an intricate science. Imagination is the bridge to the invisible world. And so these children, every saint, if they were alive today, imagine me walking in saying, if you have faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. I am the son of God. What? They're throwing me in a psych hospital. Every single one of these saints would have been thrown into a psych hospital if they were alive in today's modern day and age. But that's why it's so important, like after these multidimensional journeys, to ground. Because that's what these saints and yogis could do. They could learn how to navigate not only the 3D, but the 12D. So these ungrounded psychedelic journeys sometimes are literally ending up, they're really seeing these frequencies, but they're not able to ground it. And also it's really important that if you're going to work with these upper stranded DNA, higher dimensional frequencies a lot, do it with intention and only once in a while and integrate it, because if the higher stranded DNA are continuously being activated without grounding or integration, it's a higher frequency which can crush the lower stranded DNA. So it's important to work with, you know, grounding, integration after journeys, and then also realize imagination is the bridge to the invisible world.
Right on, brother. Gosh, I've got about 50 different places we could go here. And I there's so much I want to cover. And it resonates so much in the finger point, not the finger pointing at the moon, but there's a person on the moon looking to speak with you. So I went down to Costa Rica. So that's where Runga began, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. And as we were approaching this event that we just hosted, I was like, what is going on? Like, it feels like the beginning. This is like the 8th year or something. Mm-hmm. But why is it feeling like the beginning? And I had a long kind of, you know, it was like a very busy couple of months before the event. And I was like, as you said, like, I have to ground right now. And I need to ground for 4 or 5 days before we go into this event, because we've got 75 people. It's going to be intense. So I went down to Costa Rica to a place called Brave Earth. Mm. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this place, but as you were saying it, it was kind of coming up, because it was like no medicine, no psychedelics. I was so in tune and literally like remote viewing things, and just the clarity just from being in that space. And of course, there's, you know, a lot of psychedelics that are done on that land, and I think have been for many generations. It's a very powerful like portal, like Sedona or something like that. But we were just hiking, relaxing, you know, kind of hanging out. Mm-hmm. And there was just this incredible like energy field, as you were saying, and just this incredible potential to tap into. And I, you know, called my wife and I said, hey, like, are you thinking this right now? And she was like, yeah. So it was just wild. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of get into this, because it's all tied together. And I do want to kind of, when we get through this next kind of chapter of the conversation, I do want to go back and talk more about the chakras, the alignment, the Kundalini, and the DNA, because I think that's super important. But before we do, there's this like imagination. So, you know, kids have just this incredible imagination. As you said, you know, their brain waves, their states, Santa Claus, you know, they're in this incredibly impressionable, but also imaginative state. And, you know, I guess the hypothesis is sort of like, if we don't mess them up, they will be responding to frequency, this intron potential DNA, this sort of, and Paul Check a long time ago said, you know, we're fish that don't know we're in water, speaking about frequency and energy and sort of the field that we're in.
I like that.
And so before we get into, you know, maybe more sophisticated or plant medicines and psychedelics or ceremonies, like, there's a lot of people that just want to like manifest a better life. They want to trust their intuition. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, Samuel, the relationship between imagination, intuition, and maybe manifestation. Like, how do we, if I'm 38 years old, like, can I trust my intuition? Like, let's say I'm a 38-year-old guy that works in accounting and I want to like start manifesting a better life. Like, are there prerequisites? Like, because my guess is what we're saying in this conversation is like a child's intuition is probably really, really, really strong. They might not have the skills to communicate, like, you know, whatever. Yeah. But they're way more connected to source and frequency. And we kind of learn through our conditioning and through uploading those apps and through our educational system where we sit at a desk. And if we don't want to sit at a desk, we get medicated. So we're obviously like dampening both our imagination and probably our intuition. Mm-hmm. So are there prerequisites to stepping into our intuition, you know, drug-free, just on a daily basis? And what would those be? And then we can use that as a segue to like higher states of consciousness.
For sure. What's coming to me is number one, education, right? That's why like Dr. Joe Dispenza's work is so important right now, because he's literally educating people, you know, about the science behind how to connect, about the science behind frequency, about the science. So I would say education, because people are scared of what they don't know. right? So if we can educate people in their own language, that's why these scientific studies of showing really what psychedelics are doing, showing what meditation are doing in the language of modern science that is delivered to people in the modern journals, in their own language, in books, in their own language where they can understand, then the education, number one, is going to slowly start opening them up to the potential for the second step. If what's coming to me is believe. If you want to, you have to, like in the Bible, it says there's without faith, it is impossible. Please God. What is faith? It's imagination, knowing what you're imagining is happening, being confident and sure that that is, it's a frequency. So once you educate someone, they're open to it, right? Then there has to be some type of, I don't want to say belief yet, but I would say experience, possibly beliefs and experience. They go to a Dr. Joe Dispenza event. They do that psychedelic journey. They have that moment in meditation where they connect. They have that moment at the end of yoga, even without psychedelics, where they're feeling this peace. And all of a sudden, this idea comes to them. And it's not a thought. It's an intuitive, direct knowing. You're going to be okay. There's a plan for you. Oh, do this to like contact, write this email today. Why? Right? But in that state where no mind, then the frequency, the mind will follow the breath or the breath will follow the mind. So after a long yoga class, you're in your breath, in your body, grounded. And in that state of no mind, the brainwaves relax and the universe communicates with us through our brainwaves. It relaxes into alpha where we can concentrate. It relaxes into theta where our soul can then, the universe can send a download intuitively. And then, you know, so you have that experience, you know, education, experience, and then you slowly start believing the more you reinforce that. And then you practice just like anything. Like intuition is not taught in our schools. It's taught in India, right? Like what color am I holding right here? Like there's practices that you can do to start trusting your intuition, okay? And intuition feels light. It feels right. It's not a thought. It's a direct knowing. If you follow your intuition, it will not lead you astray because it knows before it happens. So it's a real knowing, a direct knowing. And yeah, when I'm in my thoughts, it's like it's a record of the past. It's like I'm going, it feels heavy. It doesn't feel right. I can think for 20 minutes and I still have no conclusion. Then eventually it becomes really easy to like practice. Oh, I'm in my thoughts right now. Like this does not feel right. Does not feel like that's okay. I have these tools that I can utilize, breath work, meditation, nature. For some people, it's even like deriving, you know, getting into alpha brainwaves. It's just brainwaves. Or, you know, Syntuition apps, Insight Timer, all of these different tools. And every once in a while, you can, if for those who are called, they can have a psychedelic journey if they want, you know, and literally connect to that higher aspect of themselves. And so I would say education, number one, and then experience it once you feel safe, and then believe in it, and then practice it.
I love that. I love that. And it's so true, right? Because, you know, it's the sort of thing like, I just think in health and fitness, which is sort of where I've hung my hat for the last 20 years. Like back in about 14 years ago, I started to put fat in my coffee, right? Because I went keto. I was actually in a sort of like brain.
Nice.
I was getting treated for post-concussion and stuff. So basically, I had some really good docs. And so I was told to go on what today would be called the keto diet. Then it was just a high-fat diet. But it's interesting. If we look at that as a model, you know, I had been through education in school. And so my intuition was that fat was bad. But that was actually my conditioning.
Yeah.
And then there's this, and I think this occurs even with like the Atkins diet. People are, you know, they would say their intuition says it's not healthy to eat like, you know, a lot of meat or a lot of fat, but if they're overweight, they do the thing and then they lose weight for the first time. And so there's this like, there's this feedback that like, oh, my conditioning might've led me astray because I've never been able to lose weight. Now I finally have a diet that makes me lose weight, but I'm supposed to believe that that diet's not good, but that's the only one that makes me lose weight. So how is this circle working? Right. Mm-hmm. So there's this, I guess, conditioning element, as you're saying, you get educated, you have an experience and you practice so that you can slowly shift all of that conditioning. As you said, you had to take 10 years to unlearn all of these programs and get rid of all those apps so that you could live in that connected state. So as you said, I imagine it's a bit of a process. And I just want to, as we kind of prepare to kind of drop into this next phase of the conversation, I was on Instagram, you know, the other day, as you know, as we do. And there was this Jim Carrey video, And he was just going off, and he's like, there's 33 vertebrae in the spine. Jesus lived to 33 years. And he was just going off about how he even brought Santa Claus into the conversation, which is why it's like Santa Claus, apparently, and I don't know if you know anything about this, he was saying that Santa Claus coming down the chimney was the Kundalini going up and down the spine. And, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, you know, the brain has a, you know, something that looks like the Ark of the Covenant. So the energy is coming up 33 years in Jesus's life, 33 vertebrae in the spine. So it was just this, like, you know, profound kind of perspective real quick in a 30-second Instagram video. But I want to get into this idea. And before we do, I want to say one funny thing. I was reading some of the feedback from our event the other day. And of course, we do a lot of Kundalini yoga, and we also do a lot of sound. We do gongs. And one of the feedbacks was like, you know, I had a great time, but I don't believe in chakras. You know, and I got a chuckle out of that, because there is this like gap, right? So even some of the conversation up to now, I'm sure some people like were just like, "Whoa, what was, you know, what were we talking about? What do you mean junk DNA?" You know, so maybe some of the conversation has bent over somebody's head. So let's pretend we're talking to the guy that doesn't believe in chakras. Like, how does Kundalini? Can we go in and like we're telling, you know, a 5-year-old, like, how do we understand the energy moving up and down the spine, and how does that connect us to source, like at a really fundamental level? And then maybe we can go into medicines and such that might help people with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's such an important art to learn how to explain it. Everybody believes in energy. So if we can start explaining everything in energy and frequency, then just say like, oh, a chakra is all it is an energy center, an intelligent energy center that lives in your brain and in your body, right? And actually, you know, they were saying 7, but it's actually 15 chakras. So energy centers, and, you know, let's just say your stomach is an energy center, your root is an energy center, and you just explain your heart is an energy center, and they're intelligent, they have their own brain, you know, your thymus, whatever language they speak, we can speak it. So, cause that's why a lot of us have, you know, delved into a lot of different, languages and formats, and all languages is an attempt to explain, it's an attempt to explain energy, and it's a very sometimes poor way of trying to explain energy. So that's why if we can educate them using the language of energy, but the most important thing is they have to experience it, because once you know, you cannot not know. And trust me, I have some very cool technologies, and so do you, I know you do, where they can experience energy and they say, whoa, what was that, right? And it's like once they experience it, like, so you just talk to them in their own language. Okay, there's an energy center here in your brain. There's this liquid called cerebrospinal fluid surrounding your brain. There's this pineal gland, if you want to call it. It's like an antenna. So you can use like words like that. Imagine a TV and you're bringing in frequency. The future of medicine, Tesla and Einstein said, is frequency. And so you can explain everything in frequency. And I think that's the best way, is like to use universal language such as energy centers. And then at the bottom of your spine, imagine there's a really high frequency energy that if you bring it to your brain, it's like giving your brain a shower. Like it's like bathing your brain in high frequency energy. And if when you pressure flows from high pressure to low pressure. So if you squeeze your root, then it's going to send that energy from your first energy center to your second energy center. If you squeeze your lower abdomen, that's going to send your energy from your second energy center to your third energy center. If you squeeze your upper abdomen, it's going to send your third energy center to the fourth energy center, which is your heart. Once it hits your heart, that's the point of no return. If the energy centers are open, the freeways are open, the Ida and Pingala, if they're Hindu, you can use those languages. Boom, it goes straight up. And once it goes up, it tickles the fluid and there's crystals. And these crystals become like a TV antenna. And when you do it, and trust me, take one class and you'll feel it. You can feel. And sometimes you're going to get downloads, like an email packet being dropped into your DNA, if you want to call it, into your brain, which is the administrator frequencies. And so you can explain it in any way using, and that's why I think Jesus was brilliant in the fact that he was able to take these advanced spiritual concepts and explain them in parables, in stories. which were like, you know, the people of that day ate figs. The people of that day like did things. And so, you know, if we can explain it in these advanced spiritual concepts in stories, stories are the quickest way to connect the heart and the mind effortlessly. As soon as someone starts telling a story, like, and the people actually listen, their heart and mind is connected. So they're taking in the frequency. So really knowing who you're talking to, what language they speak, what their daily life is, and then being able to explain these concepts and educate them in a way that, that they can familiarize with their heart and brain. And then eventually when they're open to it, then giving them the experience.
We just, you know, while we just paused for a quick second, I went and found it. So for those interested in the breath that you were just talking about, if you go to Joe Dispenza's website, the meditation is called Tuning Into New Potentials, updated version. And it's a meditation for sale on Joe Dispenza's website, and he'll actually walk you through this breath. But just to kind of support people in case they want to try it, because I'll tell you, I went to Joe Dispenza in May, and I will say this breath takes practice. You know, it's the sort of thing I've done, you know, I've done 3 years of Kundalini yoga, and I'm very familiar with it. But it's funny about the education and, you know, a significant emotional event and sort of the process people need to take to become more conditioned. And when people were watching, when some of the more sort of unconvinced participants in the workshop were witnessing what the breath looked like in somebody that had done it before versus what they perceived they looked like, they were like, they're faking, they're crazy, they're, you know, looks like they're having an orgasm, you know, it's just crazy. So I will say it takes some practice to get right. But if somebody wanted to do the breath right now, and then we'll move on. So there's this like, this is pulling up on the, you know, what we'd call in yoga, the lower locks, right? So I don't know how you might explain it, but kind of like you're trying to stop yourself from going to the bathroom, number one and number two at the same time. And then you kind of said it like squeezing the stomach as you're inhaling, or do you do it with a full breath at the bottom and squeeze up?
You can do either or. There's different breaths for each one. So, I mean, might want to start with inhaling and then squeezing that root lock, they call it, like you said, like when you're trying to go to bed. Actually, it's better to exhale and then do it. My apologies. So you exhale all the air out. So maybe take a deep breath in, filling with oxygen, and then exhale all out. And while empty, squeeze that muscle you use to hold your pee. Kegel exercises if you're a woman. Squeeze the lower abdomen. See the energy shooting from the first center to the second center. As you squeeze your lower abdomen, you see the energy squeezing from your second center to your third center. Squeeze the upper abdomen like you're holding your whole belly in. Now see this energy shooting up your spine to your heart all the way to your third eye in the middle of your forehead. Now focus and visualize this energy on anything you want to create. The most powerful creative force on the planet, which can create a baby, is now being utilized to create whatever it is you want to create. A new global paradigm of mental health, abundance, loads and loads and avalanches of abundance for Runga to spread this beautiful work. Whatever it is you want to create, a healing center, you know, you focus on that and you hold your breath. This is great because it's increasing CO2 tolerance, which is releasing, flooding your body with oxygen. And Olympic athletes do breath holds so that they can do this. And at the end of the boxing match, they still have oxygen capacity when their opponent doesn't. So it's doing so many things. It's giving your organs a free massage. Your liver is being helped right now. Your spleen is internal massage. It's just so healthy. And then when you can't do it anymore, you exhale. And then this energy like literally spreads into your auric field. And you just use the most powerful creative force on the planet to create whatever it is you want to do.
Beautiful, brother. Thank you for that guidance. It was, it's at Joe Dispenza, literally. So we did this for like 40 minutes or something.
Wow.
And he does it. He might only do it. Obviously, I was kind of like, you know, floating around the ether at that point. But like, he might do it for 15 or 20 minutes and then he just guides you into meditation afterwards. But literally, when I opened my eyes, I was looking at Giza. I was looking at the Great Pyramid. I was like, "Whoa! Like, what is going on?" And it,
like,
and
you were literally like seeing visions of Giza,
like literally seeing visions of Giza. And I had the mindfold on, so even though my eyes opened, like, you know, it was still complete darkness. And the other hack that I kind of figured out is I put my hands together like this, and then as I'm
squeezing my abs and squeezing the breath up my spine. I'm pressing my hands together as hard as I can at the same time and kind of pulling them down. And what I've found is it just like, you know, you just get that complete like explosion in the brain, and it's a powerful breath. And as we kind of get into that, I would say another sort of definition question, Samuel, is how do you define the word medicine in your current work?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was journeying, holding sacred space for a dear sister, and she was like journeying, and she's like, here comes a little bug. Oh, it's insect medicine. Here comes a flower. Oh, it's flower medicine. Here comes the wind. Oh, it's wind medicine. And eventually I got the idea. I said, oh, everything is medicine. Like literally the universe is always working for me, not against me. For Christians, you can say God is always working for the good of them who love and who have been called to love. You know, and New Agers say, oh, the universe is always working for me, not against me. And so when anything happens to me, it's like, how is this working for me, not against me? So if you can adopt that perceptive reality that the universe is intelligent and conscious, and everything is working for the evolution of consciousness, even the difficulties are producing perseverance, which produces character, which is the lesson that I needed at that time. And intention is a frequency. So intention is a frequency that exists between matter, literally, which intention has infinite organizing power. So if my intention is for the liberation of all sentient beings and fulfillment of the Emerald Covenant, as well as for a new global paradigm of mental health, I'm literally going to attract exactly the right teacher, the right book, the right podcast, exact the right accident. But it's not an accident. It's literally attracting to me exactly what my intention is. It's a frequency, a magnetic frequency. So at that point, then I have to trust. And the more you get to know source in your early morning hours, or the universe, if you want to call it, and you understand, know thyself, or you can know everything is the microcosm is the macrocosm. If you understand a cell really, really, really well, you're going to understand the universe, right? So Zach Bush knows the cell really, really well. And off that microcosm, he explains the whole universe. So if I know myself, if I know source in one aspect mastery, I'll know the entire universe. And the more you know source, the more you know the universe, the more you're going to understand, oh my goodness, source is amazingly, intelligently wise, beautiful. The time cycles are perfect. Everything is working for me, not against me. At that point, then everything becomes medicine.
Yeah. Love that, man. And yeah, it's so true. And I think we're so conditioned, and these sort of definitions and these sort of brainstorms, like what is love? What is imagination? What is intuition? What is manifestation? What is medicine? Like, I think they're important questions, like, you know, especially as people are planning to sort of, you know, if they're planning to step into, you know, trauma resolution or, you know, higher self or whatever we want to call it in sort of this new paradigm of mental health. But I think the old paradigm of mental health is like pop a pill for your problem and hope that another problem doesn't show up. And if it does, then take another pill. And so there's this like this broader definition of medicine kind of says like, oh, well, like if you're, you know, having attention problems or depression or any of the things that we've kind of talked about, that's a sign. That's like, so now you got to look at what medicine is actually coming into your field, right? And actually, real quick before we step forward, it's how we met. Like, your name just kept showing up in my life, and I don't even know who you are. And I would be online, or I would be, you know, doing whatever. And I would either hear your name, someone mentioned you, I would see it in front of me. And then finally, you know, I was just like, who the hell is this guy? And so I Googled and I found on one of your websites, like I found an email contact, you know, you remember this. And I was just like, hey, man, I sent you an email. I was like, hey, man, we're supposed to hang. I don't know you, but hey, like, can we talk? Yeah. And that was kind of how our friendship began. It was just, but again, like you've had a profound impact on me. So there was this, like, you were the medicine that kind of stepped in right when I needed it. And it was just me just saying, I'm going to take this step into the unknown and just say, Samuel Lee, MD, like, I don't know why I need you, but, you know, I'd love to talk. So having, I guess, the courage to, and it was easy for me, but I know for other people, they might just seem crazy and they might not do it. But
that was a big step for me, just stepping in and saying like, hey man, can we talk?
Yeah, I love that, man. And like literally it started with your intention, because you have this intention to build Runga, which is going to help people, which is based on mental health, which is, and so I have a common intention. And so through this intention, which is a frequency, like somehow my name popped up, and then we talked about this intention, and then you followed your intuition, your intuitive hit. Like if you would have waited on that and said, hold on, this strange Asian dude, the mind comes in and it's like, why? He's got, look at his hair. Oh my God. Like what? Oh, what? Right? Like the mind comes in, right? Like, but you just had been doing your practices and you're in touch with your intuition, with like the things we talked about. And you intuitively shot a message, and that intuition then it led to, oh, the universe is always working for me.
Yeah.
And then we had the courage to just follow our intuition and you know, hang out. And like, I was like, dude, we're just being ourselves, and like led to this podcast, which, you know, it's everything we talked about in this podcast. It literally, you took those steps, and that's how this is happening.
That's right, man.
So everything is medicine. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And then you happened to be in Austin, like, you know, soon after, and we got a coffee. I remember I told my wife like, hey, I'm going to go down and get a coffee. I'll be back. And then we ended up talking for like 5 hours, like at the coffee shop or something. So yeah, it was a really amazing blessing. Mm-hmm. So I do want to get into psychedelic medicine and sort of give some people something to chew on here. Cause I think this is like, you know, this third wave of psychedelics is kind of happening right now. You know, in the 60s and 70s, that was the second wave, and it was sort of like, you know, the war on drugs came in. And I saw a really amazing, and I can send it, you've probably seen it, you probably have it, but this like has like every drug starting with alcohol and sort of like a bar graph of destructiveness. And when we look at alcohol, it is by far the most dangerous substance. Like, it hurts you, it hurts others, hurts everything about, you know, it was the biggest bar on the graph. And then when you look at all these like substances that are super controlled, like, you know, mushrooms or, you know, any, they're like, compared to alcohol, the potential harm is like so minuscule. And you can really see it, but those are the ones, alcohol, you know, I could go buy 3 jugs of rum or something if I wanted to, but like, you know, a lot of these other drugs are illegal, but they're making a comeback just like they did in the 60s and 70s. And I think it's a really interesting paradigm. And you are such a unique guy to talk about this. And I've never really talked about psychedelics on the podcast, but because you come from the medical background, you're, you know, an MD and a psychiatrist. And then you're also, you've spent time with ritual elders and in, you know, Native American tribes and sort of seen this other side. And now, you know, the psychedelic sort of space, you mentioned Aubrey Marcus, who's like going down to Peru or wherever and, you know, consuming these extremely sacred plants. But then you've got what's really driving this third wave of psychedelics is like MAPS and like this more, these ketamine treatment centers that are popping up. And there's this like complete like different paradigm where it's like, you know, medical establishment, you know, white walled building. And so there's this like psychedelics right now, you're like in the jungle drinking, you know, ayahuasca, or you're literally in a medical office, like getting, you know, a ketamine shot or something. So like, what's going on in psychedelics? Like, how do you help people if they're interested in exploring these areas? Like, there's a pretty broad like spectrum of potential of where somebody could end up is what I'm saying. And like, like what's, I guess that's enough for me, but like pass you the ball. But yeah, I think psychedelics, I want this space to like do what it's supposed to do. I don't want like, I don't want it to like fail like it did in the 60s and 70s, because I think when you look at the research from MAPS on PTSD or depression, ketamine for depression, it's just crazy. But I do think there's also risks and also a lot of opportunists right now that are sort of like creating some dangerous situations for some people. So anyways, you're the expert on this. So,
brother, I love that intro, man. I love that segue, and you covered it all, man. And so I'm just going to like try to speak in the language of frequency. There's no good or bad. Everything is a frequency. So as a Western psychiatrist, board certified psychiatrist, only for 7 years, okay, prescribing these mind numbing medications, what was it doing to people's frequency? Oh, it was shutting down the second energy center. It was numbing the frontal lobe, so that they can continue to function in a dysfunctional society without treating the root cause. Is that good or bad? I'm not going to say it's good or bad. It's a tool in the tool belt. that, you know, if someone doesn't want to go into the mental hospital and like they've tried everything and they really just want to be numb for 4 months to take away the pain, okay, fine. This is an option, but it's going to cause a chemical disbalance, not fix it. It's not going to treat the root cause of what's happening, right? So I learned that model for a long time. And then, you know, I allowed myself to go through very low frequency things that people call PTSD, major depressive disorder. I went through a very high frequency thing people call mania. And I allowed myself to personally experience this while I was a board certified psychiatrist. And then I had to heal myself. So I started asking the questions, okay, what do these ancient plants you talked about, psychedelics, what do they really do? Can they really treat the root cause? So, you know, trips to the Amazon, doing ayahuasca, really learning that the plants have consciousness. You can communicate with energy. It's conscious. It's intelligent. Oh, okay. And then learning, oh, fourth, fifth, sixth stranded dimension, beyond space and time. Okay, that's what this plant can do. But the plants are neutral. Consciousness is neutral. Everyone's saying Mother Ayahuasca, but it's like that's what consciousness has decided to call her. Therefore, consciousness believes that. Therefore, if they believe that, that's what it is. But we're like, you know, in the last scene of Avatar where the plants are neutral. So if one car is driving towards a green light and an intersection and the other car is driving, 50% of the time, one's going to get green, the other's going to get red, the other's going to get green. Unless the survival of a species depends on it, then consciousness reserves the right to allow one to be green and the other to be red. And right now we're like in the last scene of Avatar where the water of Mother Earth, they're going for the water, they're going for fracking, they're going for the minerals, they're going for the resources of Mother Earth. And they're literally, Mother Earth is at this point where the survival of her depends, her bones, her tectonic plates, her blood is her water, depends on how quickly those who love peace can organize and collaborate better than those who love war. So consciousness is like the last scene where the plants are coming to surface. Ayahuasca saying, hey, this is what I am. This is what I can do. And I'll never say anything's good or bad. The mushrooms are coming to surface. Oh, microdosing can really help balance. Oh, it can. Oh, there's like, it's like a what is as within, so without. As the underground internet of the psilocybin is connected underneath, it can connect neural pathways in your brain exactly the same way. Different parts of your brain can start communicating. And if one part of the brain can communicate with that part of the brain that's never been done before, in one sitting, you can quit smoking because you'll change your perception and say, oh, why am I so that silly? I have a new way of looking at it. And so this increase in consciousness is what is needed right now. And so these plants are coming to surface. And they're coming and they can help. But exactly what you said, it's so important. Anytime you go anywhere in the invisible, especially on the physical plane, but especially in the invisible plane. Okay, people plan, right? I'm going to Bali. I'm going to take this airlines. I'm going to be there for this many days. But most importantly, why am I going there? What is my sacred why? What is my intention? And that's what I feel is so needed right now with this psychedelic renaissance is, where am I going in the invisible world? Why am I going there? How long am I going to be there? How safe is it for me? How pure is the facilitator? All of those things matter. The set, setting, intention. And you better be damn sure when those invisible portals are open that you're with a facilitator who only has your best interest in mind, who understands the invisible world, who understands how to put a blanket of love, light, and peace, who's not going to put a curse on you, who's not going to try to steal your power, who's not going to unground you and not give you the integration that you need. All of these things are so important. So with this psychedelic renaissance, and so there's now these indigenous medicines, they all can be helpful in certain degrees and places. But also there's this bridge medicine. The future is frequency. So Tesla and Einstein both said the future of medicine is frequency. So I want to bring it back to science because we're in this beautiful place where spirit and science are meeting. And so the fourth, fifth, and sixth stranded DNA is a bandwidth of frequency, which people say, cool, soul, bro. But what is that? It's a carbon crystalline matrix, a less dense version of me existing right now that knows why I'm here, what I'm here to do, what order to do it, how to heal, and in what order to heal. Okay, how can I safely and consistently connect people to this frequency? Because all indigenous cultures understood there's only one dis-ease, not the 20,000 that science and DSM-5 has created. There's only one. And that's a disconnection from one's own spirit. Because if I can connect myself to my source of healing, the source of energy, the source Then from there to the oversoul, which is the 7th, 8th, 9th strand of DNA, to the soul, 4th, 5th, and 6th, to my mental, which administers that frequency. And it literally, the words I speak, I am healthy, healed, and whole. Consciousness binds to those words. The water absorbs that, and it resonates through the potential DNA in between the double stranded helix, lighting up if there's bioresonance, coding for epigenetics, and the proteins, the words that I just spoke, become proteins, which are the building blocks of life. Therefore, the word became flesh. Therefore, if you want to find a good doctor, find a doctor who will change your attitude, because if you change your attitude, the right thoughts, the right words, the right beliefs, the right come in, and that becomes your reality. And therefore, the metaphysical is the cause. What we don't see, thoughts, words, belief systems, things like that, which become physics, the effect, which is what we see, which scientists only looking at what they can see right now. So actually, it's so important. That's why I facilitate a ceremony, which consistently and safety connects people to the 4th, 5th, and 6th strand of DNA in a safe way. We oscillate past the lower 4th dimension. That's where the disembodied energies and entities hang out. And we're not trying to go there. Shadow work is important, but we're oscillating because I found in a container of only love and light, that's where the most healing happens. So we oscillate past that. We quiet the mind. We open the heart into multidimensional frequency ranges. Then we quiet the rear default mode network using serotonin, glutamate, GABA. It's a science. Mm-hmm. And once that's quiet, there's a direct connection to the soul, and we can record the voice of the soul, a multidimensional soul song. Bring that back. Now the person said things, saw things, spoke things. Now we can type it out, bring it to the 3D, and integrate that, create a soul action plan into the physical, and ground those higher stranded frequencies into the lower plane. And so that's why I think, where are we going? We're going to connect you to your 4th, 5th, and 6th stranded DNA, your soul frequencies or higher. How are we going to get there? Using these three sacred tools. The medicine is not the medicine. The medicine is you. Your DNA projects the hologram. These are sacred tools to connect you to that. How safe is it? Very safe. In 2 years facilitating, not one person has gone dark, because it's a frequency. It's a science. How long am I going to be there? It depends. We know precisely the half-lives of these medicines. So this psychedelic renaissance right now, there's a lot of people doing ketamine clinics and things like that. But it's like, okay, I think it's important to use the right protection, to know what frequency we're going to know why we're going, and to know how long we're going to be there. And so I feel like these indigenous medicines serve a purpose, but this medicine now is a bridge medicine into the future, which is frequency. The future is frequency, and the future is now. And Tesla and Einstein both said the future of medicine is frequency. So it's all science. And so I think the psychedelic renaissance is beautiful, but it's also really important to work with the right setting, intention, facilitator, and protection.
I love that, brother. Wow. And one of the things you said to kind of put it into super digestible terms. So if you choose to, and again, like, you know, whether it's a ceremony or whether it's a really intense breath work at a Dispenza event or what have you, when you ascend beyond like what we'll call the 3D and you start to like get these uploads, you start to get a picture from the top of the mountain, so to speak, right? And you start to see your life somewhat mm-hmm. differently. You feel into that oneness. You kind of hit on a point that's so important, and it's like the bringing of that back into the 3D through this process that you described of literally recording that song and putting it onto paper, because when you leave the Joe Dispenza event or the ceremony, ego comes back online, and you might have like you might have said, you know, I need to call my mom, or I need to like do this, but then the ego comes back online, and then you just go back to work on Monday morning, and then you're like, that was a really, you know, I think a lot of the psychedelic and living in Austin and formerly in LA, like, you know, I'm in kind of the epicenters of all this. You know, we used to joke in LA that we can't go a week without getting invited to an ayahuasca ceremony, and it's a little bit like, you know, the I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot of like bliss junkies out there that I think are kind of like missing that piece, that like, how do I bring the lessons learned back into the three-dimensional space? And that's through this practice after a ceremony where you're actually writing your lessons and now creating follow-up steps or creating a conditioning plan so that you can actually integrate. And as you said at one point on this conversation, it's like, you know, and I suppose this comes from the indigenous perhaps, but like the space between experiences, you know, should be somewhat significant, because there should be a lot of work to be done after any one ceremony.
Oh, brother, you got it, man. That's it, man. And yes, the integration into the 3D of these frequencies is important because, yes, in the top of the mountain, there's going to be neural pathways that are formed, visions that are seen. And it's a very thin neural pathway. It's like the road less traveled. It's a connection between the brain that is not the strongest. And when the ego comes back online a day or two later, the default mode network of walking the widest path, the broad path, Jesus called it, you know, going back to the normal Monday through Friday. And if you do that, then that little path, if you don't continue to feed that new vision, that new way of thinking, that new neural pathway, it's going to dissolve. And yes, you might have had a little bit of bliss in the journey, but at the same time, like you just literally, if there's no integration, exactly what you said, you become a bliss junkie. And then not only that, I want to pave a picture, which I don't think a lot of people are understanding right now. If you continue to activate your higher stranded DNA, like white powder, gold, and different multidimensional things like that, without grounding it, the higher stranded DNA can crush the lower stranded DNA. And so it's important to integrate the frequencies after a journey, take time to type it out, bring it to the physical, and make sure that there's sufficient time and energy and intention to, you know, re-listen to the music, write it out, you know, repave that neural pathway. The ego is going to come back online a day or two later unless we continue to pave and make these small neural pathways connections in the brain the main way. And so there's ways to integrate into a new way of thinking and integrate the top of the mountain so it comes down to the lower energy centers. And that's through re-listening to the music of the ceremony can reactivate cellular memory by typing out what you were shown at the top of the mountain, by working with the integration specialist, by reading your transcript once a week before you go to bed, and re-engaging the neural pathways of what was shown during the at the top of the mountain. And that's the most important thing, to bring these things into the physical plane, or else you become exactly what you said, brother, a bliss junkie. You're just going and getting high and then not integrating, getting high. And that is dangerous. Why? Because if you continue to activate your higher stranded DNA without integrating it into the lower strand, higher oscillation will crush the lower stranded DNA, causing molecular compaction. And so you'll see a lot of people who continuously do psychedelic journeys. Sometimes they're a little ungrounded. Sometimes they can go into episodes and things like that. So it's really important, I think, to emphasize integration and taking what was shown at the top of the mountain in the upper stranded perceptions and bringing that to the physical.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, man. And I think, and you know, as I said, like there was, when I was down in Costa Rica, there was a lot of people that had just been crushed by a medicine ceremony. And I got the impression that they were sort of, they weren't ready for that level of experience. And they weren't ready for sort of the power of a sacred medicine in a sacred space in a, you know, indigenous environment. And so I guess my question would be, so if somebody, you know, is maybe they read Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, maybe they're, you know, they listen to a podcast about psychedelics. What are sort of like, where do people begin if they're like, you know, they're wondering if psychedelics are the sort of path, is there a specific medicine they should look for? What's the path if somebody's like, you know what, that might be something that could really change my life?
Yeah, I love that. I think it's, once again, it's a science. It's a calling. So the consciousness of the medicine or the plant has a consciousness, and it's a calling. My consciousness and the consciousness of ayahuasca agreed to have a journey. Mm. And if it's not a calling, then you can literally experience what you saw in Costa Rica, where people are like, from a place of non-calling, from a place of desperation, from a place of lack, trying to find something. But the rules of the universe are lack creates more lack. If I go into anything because of lack, it's going to create more lack. So I think it's important, like books like Michael Pollan, education. So starting with education, reading like books that can really speak the person's language and educate them. And then they can integrate that and say, hey, actually, this is, they have all the information necessary to make an informed consent decision. I'm aware of this plant. I've researched this plant. I'm aware of the risks. I'm aware of the benefits. And in that information and knowledge, I choose to accept this calling to explore the consciousness of this plant or the consciousness with this facilitator from a place of full power and knowledge and informed consent, understanding the risk and the potential benefits.
Nope.
So education and intention.
No force and source. And that includes you, you just like backing your way into an ayahuasca ceremony, right? That would be a forceful, step. Mm. So there's this this surrender that needs to occur. And you've said something to me a lot, and that's imperfect timing. I remember the first time I emailed you, you said, "Oh, give me a call," and you said, "Give me a call in perfect timing." Yeah. And I was like, shit. it's profound. What do you mean by imperfect timing?
Yeah. What I mean by that is there is no time. There's only consciousness moving through different densities. Mm. And so the way I live my life these days is, I'm fully human. So I have my human trials and emotions and everything, but I'm also fully divine. So I use my tools to connect to a space, a dimension where my higher self, where there's no time or space. And that part of me has access to information beyond time or space. When is the perfect time where Joseph and I are aligned to meet on the physical? So I'll go to that part of me and I'll give it an intention and say, for the liberation of all sentient beings, fulfillment of the Emerald Covenant, show me what I need to see, tell me what I need to do. And I'll do my chants, connect, or do my breath work, whatever, connect to that frequency, and then I'll listen. And then sometimes they'll tell me, "Oh, today write these two emails." Today, and literally when I'm in that space, I can write an email that would take me 2 hours and 2 minutes. And then when I'm in that space, it'll just intuitive knowing, intuition once again. "Oh, today text Joe, text your brother Joe." And I don't know always why, but that part of me is so intelligent, I've come to trust it. And so that's what I mean in divine, perfect, right, timing, harmony, and order, because make no mistake about it, when it's aligned on the physical, it'll happen if I'm tuned in to that state. And so that's what I mean, just like flow like water, path of least resistance. And then when it's supposed to happen, if I'm completely letting go with an intention, it'll happen when it's supposed to happen.
I love that, man. I love that. What did we miss? Is there anything more in the future of mental health that we could kind of close with here, in terms of your vision or what needs to deconstruct or be torn down and what needs to be built?
Yeah. I think it's always focus on what you want, not what on you don't want. Attention creates structure. So there's old systems that are slowly going to fall apart as consciousness increases. So it's like, okay, a new global system of mental health that is based on energy and consciousness, not on labels, diagnosis, and symptoms. So really focusing on increasing the consciousness and building the structures. It's like we're at this state. Remember, brother, like when in marijuana, before marijuana was a popular drug or a medicine, I like to call it, in Santa Maria, there was people in their father's garage, like literally in Seattle, concocting the perfect strains and working with the seeds and building the right connections, because they knew in about 3 to 5 years, it was going to be legal. And if they had the right connections, the right medicine, the right strains, and the right intention, that it would blow up. And literally, these people have like top 10 marijuana companies on the planet. So right now, we all know the future of medicine is going to be frequency as well as psychedelics. So the right people talking right now, and I like literally every day, I have these ideas. Literally, nature has the answer. Things that can replace SSRIs, things that can, treat a lifetime of trauma in 4 to 6 hours. The technology is already here, right? So we're aware that MDMA is in stage 3 developmental trials. We're aware that these things are going to happen. Consciousness is moving this way because the frequency of Mother Earth, Schumann resonance, is increasing, which means that increased frequency on Mother Earth, the core of Mother Earth, the Schumann resonance, all it does is it increases the frequency, it increases so that light exposes darkness. So like literally these systems that no longer serve us are going to be exposed, and everyone's going to have a choice. Do I want to abide by systems based that, are based upon these denser frequencies, or, literally flow and align to frequencies based on holarchy, transparency, respect, informed consent? And so right now, I think it's this beautiful time, this polarization as frequencies is happening, and a new global paradigm of mental health is being born. And my vision is that every being, no matter what socioeconomic status, has access to clean, high frequency water, clean food, and as well as to mental health systems that actually treat the root cause. And so the right people right now, we're collaborating, we're talking, and we're building networks and programs, decentralized healthcare, decentralized finance. And also, I want to bring it back to, you know, what you said about when you were on Costa Rica and all of a sudden you felt this energy flowing through you. You felt this clarity. And why is that? It's a science, because if you want to help Mother Earth and everything living on Mother Earth, there's literally crystals underneath the earth and these sacred sites that are all connected like an internet underneath the earth. And when we're on these sites, you know, some people say in when they're in Sedona, like their Kundalini rises spontaneously, like literally when you're on and your DNA is key coded for sacred sites. How does a bird know in perfect timing and season how to migrate to the exact right place with the exact right weather, with the exact right conditions? Well, it's following the ley lines of Mother Earth, the electromagnetic ley lines of Mother Earth, the brain of Mother Earth, which is the crystals underneath the earth, give the brain, if you want to call it, sending frequency into the ley lines. So I think it's really important to understand like the places where these healing centers are being built, the places, these sacred sites, if we can activate the energy underneath the earth, it's going to activate the energy of the ley lines, the brain of Mother Earth, which is going to lift the frequency of the animals, everything, the water, everything living on Mother Earth, the humans, into a newer, higher frequency, which is going to create this new global paradigm of mental health, which is going to create what Eckhart Tolle calls the new earth, which is, you know, Bob Marley saying about Zion, what Jesus saying about the kingdom of heaven, whatever you want to call it, this new society, which is based on these new principles. And so really tuning into grid work and ley lines and activating the right sacred sites on Mother Earth to create this new global paradigm of mental health, which we're already doing, which is beautiful. And the technology is already here. All we need is exactly what we're doing, brother, to have these conversations, to spread this information. And the technology is already here. All we need is an increase in consciousness.
Beautiful, brother. And it is funny, when I was leaving Costa Rica, or when I was leaving, heading to the airport, sure enough, like I had all these profound uploads from the universe. And again, just that spontaneous Kundalini, calling my wife, knowing exactly what she was thinking about while I was gone, remote viewing. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but I was literally, I called my wife and I was like, who's in the house right now? Cause I had a vision that someone was in my house, and she was like, so-and-so. And I'm like, okay, cool. But like, I saw it just from coast. It was insane. And literally, literally we're leaving and we pull out and, you know, we drive a little bit down the road and I just see this massive volcano. And I'm like, that thing active, to the driver? And he's like, yeah. He's like, that thing is an active volcano. And I'm like, you know, you talked about what's going on below the surface, Mother Earth. I'm like, this is like, this place is like a portal, you know, they don't call it Brave Earth for nothing. It's like, this place is a major portal. So there's that, like, there's that feeling, that hunch, and then looking for symptoms. Oh, there's a volcano, you know? Okay. So like believing that, there is some incredible potential and some incredible frequency on the planet. Now, as we prepare to close, Samuel, the one thing is, and I want to manifest my own reality, but like, what do we need to prepare for? Because if we start SSRIs as an example, I'm sure, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I'm sure that's $1 billion industry or a $20 billion. I don't know how many dollars are, if you've got something that can heal somebody in 4 hours, well, that's a lifetime customer for a multi-billion dollar organization. And there's a lot of people that get paid from that $1 billion. So what do we need to prepare for if there's this new emergence of this decentralized medicine? What is the $2 billion a year SSR industry? What does that look like if people actually begin to heal the root cause? Like, what do we need to prepare for as we're manifesting this reality? Like, are there going to be like, are we going to have to get shields? And, you know, what's going to come from the $2 billion stack as it starts to come down?
Yeah, it's a really good question, brother. You know, I think the main thing is always have a daily practice, if you can, that connects with your higher self, that has access to information beyond time or space, and learn how to tune into your intuition and follow that. We might be advised to, you know, go live in eco villages. We might be advised, you know, we'll know exactly where to go at what time. We'll know exactly what food rations to prepare for. We'll know exactly what our tribe for that time and season is. And obviously always choose love. But also, you know, I think we are in a season in time where this time around, the witches are not going to be burned at the stake. I do think around this time around, we are protected to speak our truth. Yes, they might ban, you know, do certain things, but like at the same time, there's a new system being built and these old systems, they're going to crumble. Babylon will fall and God's children are now standing tall, roaring like a lion. So stand in your power, speak your truth, connect with your higher self, follow that, have the courage to follow that. And everything's going to be better than all right. These new systems, yes, we do have new things. Nature is so intelligent. Things that can replace SSRIs that are $100 billion idea. But we don't need the money because we're trying to cure people. And these old companies don't like that. That they don't want to cure. They want to keep people addicted, hooked, and things like in a low frequency. But, you know, increase your frequency. Everything is energy. So breath work, stay at an elevated frequency. Then the beneficial aspects of the planet are working with you. And have a daily practice where you connect to your higher self. Quiet the mind through the breath. And when the mind is quiet, the intuition or the heart will speak and learn how to trust that, learn how to follow that. And everything is going to be better than all right. You know, our children and everything, their source has a plan. And, you know, love wins, higher oscillation and trains lower vibration. Choose love. You are love. Choose yourself. Believe in yourself and follow your intuitive guidance. And I think everything's going to be better than all right.
Beautiful, brother. And as you said an hour ago, the breath follows the mind or the mind follows the breath, right? And so that daily practice you just alluded to is sort of like if you skip a day, you know, you don't get into the cold plunge, you don't do your breath work, it's like your breath might start following your mind and your mind might not be in that place. So that daily practice and making sure that your mind is following your breath and tuning that breath in, that's going to set the stage for wherever you want to go, wherever you want to take this life of yours.
Aho, brother. And then also intention, man. Well, anybody watching this right now, if you just have the intention, I want to know the truth. I want to be free. I want to know the truth of who I really am. You hold that intention, the right book, the right teacher, the right podcast at the right time is going to find you. So if you just make that intention, remind yourself of that intention and you know, fasten your seatbelts and get ready to fly. Houston, we do not have a problem. It's all good. It's all good. And you are who you've been looking for. And like, I just want to tell like anybody watching this, like every day, look in the mirror, you know, and look in your own eyes, the window to the soul, and say to yourself for 5 minutes a day, I love you. In different rhythms and tones, have fun with it. I love you. 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 And say that for 5 minutes, listening to a beautiful song in the background. Start your day with I love you to yourself. Believe in yourself. You are source having a human experience. You are who you've been looking for. You want to see an angel? Look in the mirror. It's your six-stranded DNA. You want to see a guru? G, you are you. Activate your 12-stranded DNA. You are who you're looking for. Love yourself every morning. Look in the mirror in your own eyes, play a song and do a happy dance for being you. Stay lifted.
Beautiful, brother. Aho.
Aho.
Aho, man. Thank you, brother. This was a long time coming and a real joy and privilege to share this time with you, man. And I appreciate all of your wisdom and the audience is going to love this one. Yeah, and I know you're in Austin right now, so who knows if I'll see you soon, but I hope to see you before it's too long, maybe before the end of the year.
Perfect divine right timing.
Yeah, that's right.
Perfect divine right that's timing, right. Harmony and order, Bo. Stay tuned in, man. What a joy, man. Thanks so much, brother, for having me on. I see you, brother.